Imagine your local government announces a massive project that will, completely reshape your neighborhood. They ask for your opinion and then, well, they legally ignore you without ever telling you why.
Yeah, it is incredibly frustrating.
Right. So in 2010, the Western Cape government in South Africa actually tried to fix this exact problem. Today, we are doing a deep dive into the document you shared with us, the Draft Western Cape Policy on Public Participation.
Exactly. And our mission today is to look at the actual mechanics of how a government stops pretending to listen and engineers a real democratic feedback loop.
Okay, let's unpack this, because to understand the fix, we really have to look at the baseline.
Yeah, before this policy, public engagement in the province was completely fragmented. You had these random legislative mandates forcing different departments to consult the public, but none of it was integrated at all.
Oh, wow. So just totally random.
Yeah, they used to rely on I's and bezos, those traditional community gatherings, but those were largely discontinued. And the Provincial Development Council, which was supposed to basically bridge civil society and government, was ultimately dissolved.
Right. So the old way was basically just formalistic constitutional compliance. I mean, it makes me think of a restaurant where the waiter is legally required to ask how your food is tasting.
Oh, that is a great analogy.
But the moment you open your mouth to say the soup is cold, they have already walked away. Like, they checked the box that they asked, but there was zero mechanism to actually get that feedback to the kitchen.
Exactly. What's fascinating here is how the 2010 policy tries to rebuild that mechanism by changing the underlying philosophy of why they engage. They divide it into two values.
Way too value.
Yeah. First is the intrinsic value, which means the sheer act of participating builds civic trust and makes citizens more capable. But the second is the instrumental value.
Which is more about the practical results, right?
Yeah.
Right. By tapping into the local experience of the community, the government actually reduces implementation costs and designs better services. They aren't just being polite, they are trying to extract vital data from the public to make the policies actually work.
Ah, but I mean, a philosophy document doesn't rebuild a bridge. You need operational mechanics to force that listening to happen. And
Oh.
here's where it gets really interesting.
It really does.
To systematize this, the government created an Olympic standard for public participation. They have bronze, silver, and gold.
Yes, and that it each serve a very specific function. Bronze is the absolute baseline. It is pure information sharing. This is the government broadcasting what they're doing through public notices or radio ads, making sure you aren't kept in the dark.
Right, the bare minimum.
Exactly. Silver steps it up a level to actively soliciting your views on a specific issue, and gold is full collaborative public participation in the decision-making process.
Okay, I have to push back a little on that silver standard, though. The document notes that silver is the required minimum for major legislation.
Yeah, it is.
But it explicitly states that under silver, feedback will not be given to the participants afterwards. You are asking people for their input on major laws, but legally leaving them on read.
It sounds harsh, I know, but think about the logistics of running a government. If they are passing standard legislation that affects millions of people, it is functionally impossible to individually reply to every single piece of public input.
I guess that makes sense, practice.
Right. Silver guarantees your voice goes into the official record. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the policy reserves the ultimate gold standard for the absolute highest level of government action, which are strategic objectives.
So gold is where the feedback loop actually has to close.
Precisely. When the gold standard is triggered, the government must go back to the public afterwards. They're required to explain the final decision and explicitly detail whether the public's contribution influenced that outcome or, why it didn't.
And the methods they use to gather this input are wild. They go way beyond boring town halls.
Oh, totally.
The document lists everything from using traditional loud hailers to gather crowds at taxi ranks to industrial theater, where actors essentially perform a skit about a policy issue in public to spark spontaneous community debate.
It is so creative.
They even use SMS polls for quick data and mystery shopping, where everyday citizens are sent to secretly test public services and report back on their experience.
It is a very pragmatic approach. The government recognizes that the public isn't a single monolith. The document defines communities by distinct ties, like geography, language, ethnicity, or age.
Because you can't just expect everyone to show up at a city council meeting on a Tuesday night.
Exactly. If you want to actually hear from all those distinct groups, you have to use diverse mechanisms to extract that data on their turf.
So what does this all mean for you? Well, it shows that your voice actually costs money to hear. Meaningful democracy is not cheap.
No, it really isn't.
To make this policy work, the province budgeted 7.5 million rand just to create a dedicated 7-person transversal team, meaning a specialized unit that cuts across all the different government departments to train them and enforce these listening standards.
It is a massive operational commitment. It proves that democratic listening is deliberate infrastructure, not just a feeling.
Totally. But there's one thing that really stuck with me. If the policy relies on defining communities by these intricate, distinct ties like geography and ethnicity, what happens in a full gold standard process when those heavily organized, distinct groups fundamentally disagree with one another?
Oh, that is the million-dollar question.
Right. When the government finally returns to the table to explain their decision, how do they practically move forward when half the province demands one thing and the other half demands the exact opposite?